Hi, this is Andrea Borcha.
And I'm Charles Wilchin.
This is Far Stuff,
the Internet of Things podcast.
This week on Far Stuff,
we talked to John Rossman, the author of the great book, The Amazon Way on IoT. He's a former Amazon executive who started the marketplace business and is now helping companies launch their own IoT products.
As a special bonus for our listeners, he's given us a free chapter of his book and a couple other cool freebies. Just visit johnrossman.com/farstuff. So what specifically about Amazon was it that drew you to write the Amazon way on IoT versus, you know, it's still a pretty competitive landscape?
Yeah, it is. And in fact, you know, when I started the book, what inspired me to write the book was I was doing some client work on digital strategy, and we were thinking about IoT, and I didn't find anything that helped answer the question, how do I think through what my IoT strategy should be? So I started thinking about that. And as I started to build, you know, the principles and the questions that help leaders answer that question, every example I could come to was like, oh, Amazon's doing that, and Amazon's doing that. And I'd already written the Amazon way on the leadership principles. And so I'm a former Amazon leader. And so obviously my brand at that point was already tied into Amazon. And I was explaining this to my wife, and she was, as she, you know, oftentimes does, was just like, hey, stupid, you know, it should just be about Amazon and IoT. And it's like, yeah, you're right. You know, and so that's how I came to the Amazon way on IoT. But my whole goal with the book was to help a business leader answer the question, what should my IoT strategy be?
You know, the leadership principles I'm aware of, because those are sort of codified. And I believe you would know this, of course, more than anyone there is, I believe it's pretty extensively, I don't want to say drilled down, it's extensively reinforced with employees as they come on, and I suppose as they stay on. Are the principles you write about for IoT also codified in that way, or are they ones that you derived just from kind of watching and learning?
The latter, just from watching and learning and seeing how Amazon and other leading companies are using IoT to improve their businesses and to consistently reinvent. And so I kind of started with, you know, what are the ways that IoT can benefit your business? And then I worked into kind of the Amazon examples and other company examples. So these are not from Amazon. Whereas, as you point out, the leadership principles are codified from Amazon. It's interesting. So I was at Amazon from early 2002 through late 2005. And at that point, the leadership principles weren't written down, but you saw them used every single day. And when I was there, it was a real interesting time because we were really launching our first platform businesses. So I launched the marketplace business, and AWS was just being hatched, and a number of other kind of platform-oriented businesses. And so we were really working hard on our principles around what does it mean to be both a retailer and a platform business. And that's when the leadership principles started to get more and more refined.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. With the development of these platforms at Amazon, and, you know, specifically when they started getting into IoT, what would you say were the biggest learning points or hiccups or challenges that really made it more difficult, or maybe better, because then you got rid of the, you know, first couple iterations?
Yeah, I think each different kind of platform has its own nuances and stories. But when we were launching the marketplace business in AWS, like, Amazon at that point had this customer obsession, you know, well baked in, but we didn't think about developers, or we didn't think about sellers as important partners. And so we really had to build that culture of having, you know, merchant obsession or developer obsession. And so I think with each platform like IoT, you know, it's really building the intuition and the insights of, you know, how exactly are the users of these tools, what are their particular needs? And I think Amazon does a very good job at really diving deep into, you know, whatever the core customer, the user is, and understanding that user and building the capabilities and the tools and the business model that fits that particular ecosystem.
Hey, you know, you built the marketplace and that was a huge success. What about that were you able to transfer toward some shared knowledge on how people can kind of improve their rollouts of IoT products?
That's a good question. You know, I think the aspect of, you know, starting with some simpler scenarios, but building it in a way and having a vision that can be extensible, that can continue to grow, is a really important concept that's transferable. And too often people build things for, you know, the first five or whatever. And the problem with that is that you probably take shortcuts.
Sorry, meaning the first five customers?
You know, the first five partners or the first five sellers, okay, or the first five devices, you know, and everything, right? And while that can be a good starting point, you'll oftentimes kind of take shortcuts or you won't do hard things that help you scale to hundreds and thousands. And so I think when you're building, you know, in your journey of IoT, it's great to start. In fact, it's in oftentimes case, you know, appropriate to start with simpler use cases, but you want to build the architecture and think of the journey in an ongoing manner so that you can scale to hundreds and thousands of devices. And so you want to be thoughtful about the architecture and the design that you put in place so that that doesn't become a hard stop for you as you want to scale things.
So you start with the kind of immediate little quick wins, easy things, which we've seen in IoT, like it's a, you know, glorified light switch or a click to order from Amazon with the Amazon Go. Do you see that a bigger, larger vision of how IoT can help improve consumer lives is already formed? Or do you think we're still in the process of figuring out what to use IoT for?
I think we are truly in the very first inning of IoT and what its impact to business, its impact to society, and its impact to consumers is going to be. And I'm really very interested in more of the industrial scenarios and the business scenarios. I think the consumer scenarios are great. But I like, you know, the notion of helping companies being more competitive and reinventing and building new business capabilities. And that's, you know, oftentimes companies should start with, how do I improve a particular process? You know, how do I cut waste out, or how do I decrease cycle time? How do I make it more efficient? But then extending into how do I serve my customer better is a great notion. And then how do I actually build new service and business models? And so there's kind of this transition between those that can oftentimes take place. But we are in the very early stages of understanding the technology impact, the privacy and security impacts, the business model impacts, and you know, any other way that IoT can impact us.
I've heard tell over the internets that Amazon will often start with a press release. Is that something that you also did for your products, or that you recommend people do?
Absolutely. It's called a future press release. And I write about that in the Amazon Way on IoT. And so the future press release is a communication. It's a written document, you know, no more than a page in the format of a press release. And the goal was really to announce, you know, the project, the initiative, the capability internally. And so it was really kind of a change management mechanism, right? And there was really kind of three parts to the future press release. The first part, you would talk about why did customers love my service? Like, what was the experience and why did it delight them? The second part would be you'd have either kind of the business case or the metrics that you were trying to accomplish here. And the third piece would be the hard things that you had to do in order to achieve those results. You wouldn't always talk about how you did them because you hadn't solved for them yet, but you would start talking about the hard things that had to happen. And you would write it not at the point of launch, but as a point like a year after launch or sometime after launch, so you can envision the success that you would have. And it was just a great way to, in a simple way, to help communicate what this project is about. Because like most things, most important projects and IoT projects, I think, are in particular in this way, they go across teams and they go across your organization. And so informing your stakeholders what it is really, really important in order to get it success, right? It's not a technology project.
Was that just kind of like broadcast as truth, or was there actual, was there debate and a bunch of iterations from them? How central was that document in actually forming the vision, or did it come out sort of, does it come out fully formed and folks just buy in or not?
Well, there's a lot of debate and work and other documents. Like in particular, there's this approach called the narrative approach at Amazon, where it would be either a 2 or 6 page written narrative of whatever your project or proposal was, right? And those things got incredible scrutiny, and you would sweat over singular words, but it would help a team and force a team to make sure that we were clear on exactly what we were proposing here, right? And then it would force the people who needed to understand it to actually read it and digest it, right? And so PowerPoint just dumbs down organizations, and that's what we were trying to avoid. And then the future press release, you know, would be done in parallel, sometimes after, sometimes before, to help start it off. But there would be a lot of iterations. But at the point, like once it was approved, then it was kind of announced to the organization and like, hey, this is what we are doing.
It seems to really help to set the bar in the clouds almost in order to kind of push. You need that push in IoT, right? To really kind of get us to that next level instead of just kind of sitting in the same old easy plugs and small fixes.
Yeah, I mean, you're doing these investments in these projects to achieve a business result, right? And so those things oftentimes require, you know, some type of change and integrations and teams working together in ways that they may not work together every day. And so you do need, and you can't take forever to do them, right? You need to do them fast, and they need to be lightweight so that you can truly experiment and make small bets so you can try things out and let them fail. And so if you don't go about things in a clear and manner, then you're not going to get people on board and understanding what it exactly it is that we're proposing to be done. And so Amazon, I think, is a great example of a type of company that iterates quickly, but they work to get clarity before they commit to something. And that helps them deliver on those things quickly and in a real consistent manner at a high quality.
To develop that clarity quickly, do you find that it's recommended to start with clear metrics at the beginning? Or is it as you're iterating, you're discovering, and so that's when you need to kind of define your success metrics? Because you don't even know what you're doing.
Good question. It, to some degree, of course, it depends on what the project is. Sometimes you have a real clear understanding of, hey, we are trying to, you know, improve this process and, you know, reduce errors by 50% or compress the cycle time or take costs out. And so you can start with good metrics. Sometimes, though, it's more of like, we're not quite sure what it is here, right? And so your metrics might come a little bit later, and they might be more focused on adoption and use and understanding, well, how do the consumers relate or respond to this capability. And so it sometimes degree depends on what it is. And then you always had your operational metrics for your service, right? You know, are all the components responding appropriately? Do they have the right availability? Do they have the right throughput? Like, all of those operational metrics were critical to anything that we would launch. And as part of the design process, we would always make sure we had the instrumentation and the telemetry that was needed so that we could manage something to be a great experience.
I love that customer focus, sort of end user experience focused, whether the end user is a consumer or industrial. And so I think that's all wonderful. And bringing that back to your book, you lay out blueprints for folks who want to apply these you know, processes in this workflow that you found beneficial. Have you had any takers yet that you know of that have kind of reported back to you and talked with you? And if so, can you share any, interesting stories from that?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Each of these books has led to kind of different and surprising invitations and opportunities. And I actually have had a couple of companies and leaders reach out to me and go like, hey, we want to go through that process. And I've done a couple as kind of like 2-day facilitations where it's really like envisioning like, you know, what could the IoT journey be and what would some of the use cases be that we would explore? What do we think the business models might be? Mm-hmm. And in one client in particular, they're asking me to kind of dive deep and like, hey, let's work on the narrative and on the future press release and on the user manuals up front and all of those things. And so I have. And so the leadership book has led more to like, hey, come out and talk to us about these principles. Mm. And the IoT book has led more to like, hey, we'd like to engage and have you help us think through what our digital or IoT strategy is.
Oh, that's interesting. So the IoT book then sort of for some reason inspires more more contacts that want to actually get your help on execution and strategy and operations. Where the other book was more, I guess, maybe inspirational or...
Well, I think it's more, it's actually more tactical. And so I tried to be more prescriptive in like, ask yourself this question, take this step, do this thing, versus the leadership book is more about like, hey, here's how Amazon thinks about situations and thinks about leadership and expects people to ask. You need to think about how those things might apply in your organization, but it's less prescriptive than the IoT book.
Speaking of business models, in your book, you talk about the platform business model. Can you explain a bit more about how that works and how do you get to that type of thinking?
Yeah. So, you know, a platform business model is essentially taking your core capabilities and letting others not only use those core capabilities, but innovate on top of them, right? Typically through APIs and programmable capabilities, right? And so, you know, the platform business that I ran at Amazon was the marketplace business. The other big platform business at Amazon is AWS. In IoT, depending upon where your device, your product is located, for some companies, not all, not a lot maybe even, but for some companies, based on where that physical product is located, it can observe and sense events and data that might be useful and leverageable for other types of companies. So, for example, I worked with one industrial hand dryer company. And if you can think about where these hand dryers are at, so there's a set of kind of conditions and events that the company itself, the brand itself would be interesting. Like, what's the use? Is it operational? When do supplies need to be reordered and reinstalled? But there's also a set of observations and events and data that could be collected based on where the perch of where that product is that would be useful for others, right? Like, you know, how many customers are walking by? What's the temperature? Are there other events going on in the room? Is there liquid on the floor? Are there safety events going on? All of those things provide a platform opportunity where you could let others access that data, perhaps build software that would be deployed on your product in order to leverage your IoT capabilities. And so that's the notion of a platform business and how it can apply to IoT.
How? Oh, sorry, I just keep coming back to this vision of what percentage of bathroom users are washing or actually washing their hands and drying them?
Yeah, what a great question, you know, and everything, right? And then you could give people a little nudge like, are you sure you washed your hands, you know, and everything, right?
Your mommy would like you to wash your hands.
Yeah. Yeah, you could make that the mommy nudge, right?
Or your date would really prefer that you wash your hands, whatever it is. So are you proposing that every IoT device basically become a platform? I mean, it sounds like you're thinking along the lines of a marketplace for data. And that brings up some fascinating security and privacy questions. So, please tell me more about that.
So, no, I'm not proposing. In fact, I'm very clear in the book, like a lot of these principles and strategies are not for everybody. And you know, you might progress, right? Like, think of it as a journey, like, but don't start at the 400 level classes, start at the 100 level classes, right? And then see how things progress. And so, no, I'm not proposing that, in fact, I think it'll be a fraction of companies that find a platform opportunity or find a data syndication opportunity where they sell data to others. Mm-hmm. But it is a potential, and you do see some early use cases of these things happening.
And where do you see, based on this IoT landscape and the platform versus not, like, is there any particular part of the IoT landscape that seems like an absolute must focus on right now? If I was developing something for IoT, and the end customer, is there any sort of large gap in the market you'd see like, yes, this is what you should focus on right now?
Well, I don't know if there's a large gap, but there's a lot of activity in, you know, transportation and the connection between transportation and city infrastructure, right? And so I think that is, you know, helping citizens gain access in cities to manage their resources appropriately and is a very, very active space.
Amazon focuses on things like transportation because they're on a grand scale. You know, they're like enormous. I'm sure they're the kind of business units that Jeff just loves. But how does that transfer when you're not Amazon? In other words, you've gone from a company who has businesses that only make sense on an enormous scale. And now as one of us civilians, you're consulting with companies who may be much, much smaller. Do all of the kind of guidelines that you've learned, all of the recipes that you've learned, so to speak, do those scale to smaller companies? And if there are some that don't, it'd be interesting to hear why.
Yeah, so I think every organization of any size has the opportunity to improve its operations, to improve the customer experience of their products, and to think about how they're going to innovate further. And, you know, obviously finding, you know, your niche and how you both start that and what the big opportunity is going to vary depending upon both industry and your level of resources and your level of risk orientation relative to that. But I think that's the premise I come from is everybody can improve operations. Every organization can improve customer experience. Some organizations are going to think about how to evolve their business model based off of IoT. And for small startups, I think that the opportunity is even bigger because you're not encumbered with, you know, legacy capabilities and with legacy customers and with legacy relationships that prevent you from really going like, hey, how would I just improve this situation in total? And you don't have to worry about kind of breaking glass and stuff. So I think the questions that I ask you to ask yourself are transferable between very small startups as well as bigger organizations. But you have to answer these questions for yourself. Like, I don't prescribe answers. I help you think through the types of questions and opportunities that might be out there to help you answer the question, what should my digital and IoT strategy be?
And in you talk about in the book the value chain analysis and the profit pool analysis. Is that a good place to start, regardless of size, or is it more to focus on the problem first and then kind of work backwards?
Again, it really depends upon your orientation as to like what the opportunity is. But I do think it's very helpful to think through things in a systems dynamic model, right? A flywheel. And one of the aspects of developing that flywheel is understanding the value chain of the industry or the environment, the ecosystem that you're operating in, and understanding where the margins are. Jeff Bezos has this quote that your margins are my opportunity. And I think that matching up where there's a bad customer experience or a lack of transparency, a lack of integration, and understanding where there's trapped margin, like that combination is where so many business models and good ideas for innovation come from, right? And so I do think that if you're searching for like, hey, what could our disruptive idea be? Understanding the value chain of the industry, understanding where the margins come from, but most importantly, like understanding where there's a bad customer experience. Those are the questions we were always asking ourselves at Amazon. And when we launched a business, we would typically launch a business in kind of one particular focus or area. And then over time, we would look upstream and downstream and ask ourselves those types of questions. And we called it the launch and learn strategy. And so that's the opportunity for companies is to think bigger than just where they operate today and where there's a broken customer experience and where there's trapped margin.
So that launch and learn strategy, the press release is written as if it's a very narrow niche product. That is successful in that space. You have data, you know where it's going, but then you mentioned it's a launch and learn. And so the learn part, is the learn part then sort of encompassed in that six pager that goes into more detail?
So many times, like the narrative could be like, here's what we're proposing to do now. But then the launch and learn is that notion that it's always a journey, and whatever we're doing today doesn't define what we're going to be doing tomorrow and 3 years from now and 7 years from now. If you look at the conglomerate business that Amazon is in today, they obviously have experimented and been curious and evolved into businesses that in no way, shape, or form clearly are tracked to being an online retailer, right?
Right.
And so that's where Amazon has, how they've gotten into so many different businesses is they launch in one place and then they look around and they learn the business and they get to understand customers and they get to understand the industry value chain. And they go, well, you know, what could we use that would help our own business and how would we let others leverage that? And that's kind of the notion of platform businesses come from.
It's fascinating to watch. You can see it happening in real time with Alexa. And it's kind of fun. I certainly did not expect, you know, the successor product to have a screen. That seemed like the opposite of what Alexa was good at the look. So yeah, it's fun to watch that process. But when it comes to small companies, what do you do? Is there anyone who's ever come to you with an Alexa-like product and you said, you know what, maybe don't do that because there's Amazon, there's Apple, there's Google. It seems like a large part of the choice is just making sure you're not in the way of the elephants that are kind of focused on certain parts of the IoT right now.
I think the challenge always for startups, but where they find success is in solving for a unique or smaller customer segment that a big broad player like an Amazon isn't positioned to serve. Mm. So oftentimes that's specific users, specific industries and business types that maybe have some unique requirements and everything, right? And so that's where small companies can innovate is kind of in those creases and in those unique requirements and unique scenarios.
Have you seen as these companies that you work with, have you seen anything come up on the industrial side of IoT that's like the equivalent on the consumer side of you know, a little too much? Like we pick on the vessel a lot because it's the, you know, the IoT cup that costs $120 to tell you what's in your cup. You know, is there anything on the industrial side that kind of was good in thought, but no real practical application?
That's a great question. I don't have a list of dumb things from the industrial IoT space. But I do think like the industrial space, you know, just, I think the privacy and the worker rights and the user rights versus the company rights, especially around, you know, data, is just a really interesting space to be watching. I'm not an expert or really advise on that particular topic, but it is very, very dynamic and interesting to watch. And so I think that that's where, you know, so many early learnings are coming from, is really that balance between like, hey, we can get value from, you know, tracking our workers and knowing how equipment's being used versus, you know, the individual right around their data. Yeah. As well as just like data ownership, like, you know, does the company that owns the equipment or leases the equipment own the data? Does the manufacturer own the data? All of those things are being, you know, negotiated basically as one-off scenarios. And I really think that there's some standards that need to be developed around that.
Yeah, that seems to be the challenge with that privacy concern and that data ownership. Do you see the marketplace going more towards industrial IoT devices being developed within organizations like Amazon or GE or IBM, or do outside small players have an opportunity to build something unique without being able to fully see the operations inside the big behemoths that would probably be their customers?
Both. And everyone's trying to, you know, make the land grabs. I do think that they will be largely industry driven because, you know, the needs and the channels and how things get acquired are very different in healthcare than they are in manufacturing versus, you know, government sector. And so I think that they will be largely industry based kind of winners and losers and dynamics.
John, what's the disconnect between business models and the IoT? Because I feel like there's a lot of devices coming out where the business model has not really matured to match sort of the new reality. So, for example, you have a washing machine that needs, you know, firmware updates for the life of the machine. And those things don't happen today, but somebody's got to pay for those things. The customer wants them because there may be security issues. The creator of the device wants them because they want people to associate a Whirlpool with something that will, you know, last them for 10 years. But it feels like those costs aren't factored in and everything's just kind of running wild. Do you feel like there's a disconnect between business models and the new connected products?
Well, there certainly is, you know, ongoing costs that can happen there. And so I think that there's an opportunity for companies to better understand what those ongoing obligations and costs are. And then on the flip side, how do I propose to turn those into service plans, into subscriptions, into opportunities to on-sell and upsell my customer so that you can have a basis for rationalizing those costs. And so I think that that's, sometimes the disconnect is between, you know, the business scenario and the cost versus, you know, the technology and the operational updates that have to happen now that you have, you know, software driven products that have to be updated at your customers. But for, you know, for every challenge, I also see like there's an opportunity there, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what companies have to continue to think through and evolve and experiment with.
Excellent. What's the first question that anyone, any company should ask themselves when they're about to launch or create a new IoT product?
Well, the first question is what problem do I want to solve? Like what scenario, what user, what business problem do I want to solve? And that's, it's amazing, but that gets skipped all the time. Like they want to deploy technology and they want to put a sensor on something, right? But they don't really have a notion of like for what end game. And so then once you understand like, you know, what problem am I trying to solve? Then ask yourself the question, what data or insight or event do I need in order to solve it? And then you're in a position to start asking more of the IoT-centric questions like, okay, so, you know, what sensor and how often and in what scenarios and everything. But all the time, people forget, like, what business value am I trying to deliver?
With all that data collecting for those, like, so you create one IoT item for a certain business value, and like Amazon, you've got a portfolio now of items. Have you found any sort of interesting opportunities in the fact that when you have a full plethora of IoT devices collecting data from different aspects of consumers and industrial and developers and designers, are you seeing anything kind of bubble up from that?
Well, the way I'll think about your question is really like is sometimes you start by solving for an individual event in an individual scenario with an individual IoT device, let's call it, right? And then when you start seeing, oh, I have multiple of those out there, there's an additional set of observations and questions and value that you can connect. And so there's kind of this network effect that can take place, right? There's a real interesting report written by this National Society of Firefighters about the future of firefighting. And they're talking about the Internet of Things. And, you know, they talk about for an individual firefighter, the, you know, sensors can help manage the safety and situation and biometrics around that firefighter. But then when you have a team of firefighters, then you can really start optimizing the deployment of those resources, those people, in a dynamic situation. And then you can think about the network even bigger, not just firefighters, but the entire building and all of the other EMT people and organizations that need to be optimized within a very dynamic situation. And so you can think of, you know, value always goes up on an exponential of the network size, right? And so starting with solving an individual scenario is the right place to start, but don't be blind to what the network opportunity can develop into.
Yeah, that sounds like a really good example of kind of explaining how you can grow from one IoT device to the power of a swarm of IoT devices.
And that's why I think so many traditional companies, bigger companies, one of the mistakes they make a couple of mistakes. One is they always want to know what the ROI is before they start something. And in some of these cases, like if it's truly a bet, an experiment, you don't know if it's going to work or not, right? And so if you always try to make things so that they're 100% foolproof, you're only going to be able to tackle a certain number of scenarios and you're not really going to be experimenting. The second mistake that they make is they always think about projects as discrete things. They start and they stop. But really, IoT in particular opens you up to, it's a journey, right? And you're not always going to be able to predict at the start what that journey is. And so if you start with this mindset of just, I'm going to start and stop these projects and then we're done with it, you don't leave open the opportunity that journey can present to you.
5 years down the line, 10 years down the line, what does IoT product development look like? What is business? What do the IoT businesses look like? We have Amazon, we have Apple, we have Google, the big three, and presumably Facebook's going to get its claws in there too. What are the rest of us doing in 5 and 10 years? What do those products look like? And whether you want to focus on industrial or consumers, right, your choice.
Yeah. Well, I think that in 5 or 10 years, leveraging IoT is just going to be the obvious kind of management skill that general managers have as they're looking at how do I improve my business and how do I serve my customers better. And so instead of being like, oh, and we've got an IoT opportunity, just as today they use their transactional systems and their ERP systems and their CRM systems as just like, hey, this is how we operate our business, there's going to be much more of a common mindset and understanding on, hey, here's how IoT integrates with our business and here's how we do these things. I also think that the solutions and the capabilities are going to continue to evolve at a very fast sense. And they're going to be both, you know, operationally developed so that they go into the right situations and have all the right operational traits to them, as well as the price points are going to continue to drop and drop and drop. And those are the things that really open up the opportunities to be more and more creative, because you can afford to experiment and you can afford to scale them in much bigger senses. And so I think that just having things connected and having ready access to real-time data and events is going to be the standard expectation for anything that's out there that you're deploying. And I think that's what the future holds, which is like, yeah, of course I have, you know, sensors in my products, and of course it's connected, and of course I have real-time data. And then it's just going to be like, how do I consistently leverage that to deliver business value?
Awesome. John, thank you so much. This has been a great conversation. I really appreciate your time.
Yeah, this was a lot of fun.
Thank you for the invitation. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you for joining us.
You've been listening to Far Stuff, the Internet of Things podcast.
You can find us on the internet at farstuff.com and at farstuff on Twitter.
Get in touch with us using the contact form on our site or email us at podcast@farstuff.com.
And hey, if you enjoyed listening to our show, make sure to leave us a review on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you listen to podcasts.
And this brings us to the end of our thing. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, everyone.